very advantageous to shareholders who will not be here today. And I wish you well. Today we have Sam Tiki, Sam Solo, Sam Volkowski, and myself. Today, the two things on the calendar. First, the public testimony for Senate Bill 174. And then, time allowing, we'll get to Senate Bill 180. We do have Senator Peace here. So, if we move through the public testimony, as promised on Senate Bill 174, then we'll get to Senate Bill 180. And we have folks from all over the state. But just so that those who are listening know, we have a huge following of both support and opposition to this bill, so it would be nice to have some interest. And what I want to do at this point is probably pull up the band, make about 3 minutes for testimony. Let's have the things that we think is not getting off the list, people calling in, then I'll probably turn it down. It looks like they've probably made 3 minute statements. And for those of you listening online, if you can hear less than 2 minutes, that's fine with me. I mean, after 4 or 3 minutes, on the other hand, if you have substantive issues, now that you need 3 minutes. We have people in Anchorage, we have people in Phoenix, Palmer. And so what I'm trying to do is make sure that every section of the state that's just chime in. But we will go to Anchorage first at this point. I think many have joined sooner. And we have several people here for questions, just for the committee's notification. We have people from police and Fairbanks campus, Keith Miller. We have the Department of Public Safety and Anchors, Catherine Montreal. We have Brad Byrne, who is the chief of UAA. We have UAA General Counsel, Michael Washington, and Matt Cooper. So, and then Terry, probably Beacon Hill, and share your questions as well. My guess is that's where Beacon Hill maybe notice I didn't jump in. But anyway, at this point, we're going to go ahead and I think we'll time here. We'll keep track of that. We do have a great shower, and really great get to make the place where you talk. And let me ask the community, if there's anything that you wanted to say before we begin the podcast.
society, and also themselves, and therefore not only protect themselves, but those benefit those around them and the opportunity they present itself.
Thank you, Greg. Any questions at this point? But I appreciate you coming out to testify. You need that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm
line with?
Yes, I will stay here on the line.
I really appreciate that. I'm going to throw up to Palmer at this point to Mike Coons.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my attention. My name is Mike Coons from Palmer, and I support SB 174. My understanding is wages whereby I won't be getting the check post. In two of those, my working was reduced to stop the check. And in order to, I was armed that because of training, did not have to present my weapon. Three issues I want to address. One, the comment from the UA lawyers earlier this week. Two, requiring me to commit to CCW and specifically calls on campus. On the first, the lawyers contend that UA is a constitutional corporation and don't have to allow carriers to fire on an expense that is obvious for businesses. Beyond that, I am called key finance members to zero out funding for UA since they are not a state entity according to UA lawyers. Another reason is they find that they have no regard for our freedoms, First Amendment or Second Amendment. I may have free speech zones like Berkeley, USC, and other extremist liberal socialist universities. So, if UA wants to go and be a part of any state or university, do it on their own dime. However, if you have to take our money, then you can play by the state and U.S. Constitution. On the second issue, because the last day of constitutional hearing was Wednesday at 1 at 21 and over, no criminal record, Judge has will continue to pass the NCIS as a purchasing firearm and no permit is needed. To advise to your faculty, the victims of your clinical unit have used of second-class citizens. Students and faculty now are third-class citizens that being disallowed to exercise their rights under the U.S. Constitution as well as the state statute. The other red area that this is that supposedly being a permit requires training that will make the person more safe versus those who do not have a permit. The DCW class goes over law, situational awareness, what to do after the threat is stopped, and that's bias. I and many others encourage people to take the course even though it's not required. However, there is no training on tactics. Shoot, don't shoot, weapon detection, etc. That training is what we take on our own without the government mandate. Why? Simple. We want to be as responsible in any given situation as we can and to be able to not only survive the government threat, but to be able to survive the aftermath as well. I find it insulting that those without any training state that we don't know what we're doing. Third issue. The concern is that having people on the ground as children, mainly 16 to 18 on campus, is dangerous to the children. First, those that would be armed are all 21 years old and older. That is the law. Second, outside of the campus, those same children are surrounded by armed citizens already, i.e. Walmart, Times, etc. So since on a day-to-day basis, the children are being protected by armed citizens, all adults. To attempt to sustain an outside campus is a red herring and not a viable argument. I also find it very offensive that your legislators call adults children. 18 and older are adults. Period. Even though a child from age 63 and a 52-year-old is a child because I'm not interested. Well, in closing, I encourage members to look at the anti-gun rhetoric to see the facts and realities and to support all Alaskans who have carried a firearm. Protection of themselves and
prevent the loved ones and others. Thank you, Mr. Coons. I appreciate your time and Thomas Coons bringing expertise at this point to the impact it's having. So, Hans, yeah, you know, see that that's what sets me for the rest of the day. Seth, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we're going to hear you. Pretty good.
I'm a speaker, but I'm going to see you in the network after any time with this fellow Thank you.
our public safety, the troopers, and everybody in the city, all of you thinking about that, this would be terrible. And none of that is true. Because you're just going to talk to them about that, he says. Those that seem to do a rape or a murder, you know how awful that this bureaucratic regulation is. So the community that passes from some of these doors, and I understand these bureaucrats that run your university, if they can't even sustain and they can run the university, they can't get on a budget, if they're not making any theories, then no business is being hiring people in jail because they can't defend themselves.
Thank you very much for taking the time to come and testify. Since you brought up university, back when I teach, I was really talented to begin, but they were asked by the chairman to come up with some of the critical issues that they have in the university. They have told me that there is more than they had expected and that won't be forthcoming. They couldn't get it to us today. At this point, is there anybody in the room that wishes to testify at this point? It looks like most of all the people that have called in to testify, except for those who called in to ask a question, and those who did, let's see the place in your field. Is the UAF, the Public Safety Anchorage, the chief of UAA, the general counsel of Fairbanks, unless you want to ask questions at this point, I think any of you listening to this before the National Measure of the Committee, I think you're going to do more. So if there are any questions at this point that anybody would like to ask of any of the people at the university. Is the town council or the chief of police UAF or UAA?
This question is for whether to go with the chief of police or others that may feel that they're more better versed to answer this question. This question is on the fiscal note. And the section that goes down to it says that it's here $1.3 million fiscal note. For FY17, I believe, if I read this correctly, yes. I'm going to see fiscal notes beginning at FY18 for $22,800 a year. My question is how we get there. And the focus here seems to be on very selling K-12 programs. Yet, our K-12 schools do not have any of this equipment. The presence of K-12 schools in the state. So I'm just as you asked the question, Michelle, this time, put that together. Maybe the chief counsel knows better at this point than the chiefs do. So we'll get to either Michael Hosanna or Matt Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question to sort of insert before that question.
Okay.
And the first question is, was the university reissued, or does the university plan to reissue a fiscal note after the acceptance of version N, which allows restricted areas? And then the second question was the one that I asked previously, the K-12 schools, representing around the state, do not have these costs associated with keeping firearms out of the schools from those changes.
Right, thank you. So, what do you have to do with the general counsel probably at this point?
Yes, well, I'm excited about it. Thank you very much. This is Michael Hoskin. I'm the general counsel of the university. Digital music is not available right now from another call. I'll be happy to do that and answer questions. Our digital programs are mixed in with other programs on campus that wouldn't be subject to the concerns that would normally be associated with K-12 buildings. As you know, on K-12 property, firearms are not permitted by state law. In fact, it's
For those of you who just got online for Sample 174, we'll come back to that testimony in a few minutes, but I want to go ahead and get Sample 180 up and get both the sponsor to thank for us and give us some time and then answer some questions from the committee. And then we have one person saying that the testimony from Beacon Hill. So, Diesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Garcetti County Diesel is in the Senate District County in Anchorage. Mr. Chairman, this is the 7th year of the bill. We do have a CS, I believe, Mr. Chairman.
And that is the EU case, so, you want to talk about the
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to work order 29-LS1431 Hotel before the committee as the working document.
The objective. The objective.
All right.
You might be able to answer the committee because I need a way to do the objective and here the public can accept it and hear the changes. Let's do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. My name is Tori Norris, staff to Senator Diesel. I'm from the task force before you at Beach Hotel. So the changes in this bill, the first change occurs on, it was on page 5 of the original bill, which is going to be WSD. We removed section J of Sample 914. There are concerns by the OCS, Office of Government Services, about the structure of the door framework. It was not an initial survey going through OCS, by just going to this power of attorney process, and suggested instead that we look for a statutory exemption under 4732 for organizations similar to Beacon Hill, St. Samuel's for Children, which is what charity parties online do text file on behalf of. So that language was removed from page 5, and there was additional two additional sections added on page 7, section 5, that references the exemption that section 6 is the actual exemption for state families and organizations like that.
Any questions? Maybe we'll go ahead and have even though it was their testimony at this point on that very issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm also happy to go through all the questions that were raised in the last hearing with the members. There are some potential additional changes needed to comply with all of our committee's questions.
All right, let's do that first and then we'll get to three.
So, in your packet, you should find a legal memo that refers to Work Order 29LS1431/H. Hotel. Which outlines the numerous questions that are raised by committee members. I am going to go into detail on a couple of them, specifically the judicial bypass issue that was raised by Chair McGuire. And the memo decided that, however, further counsel with the majority attorney and legal. This bill does not supersede judicial bypass, so that is still in play. There was also a concern raised by Senator Costello about needing two parents' signature for the power of attorney. That was further questioned with legal and other outside attorneys that the delegation of powers is sort of the first step in terms of any sort of custody case, and therefore it's supposed to be easy, and it's not supposed to involve legal. Any sort of legal attorney, which is why it's not necessary to have two parents. And the most important thing is that a delegation of powers of the minor child does not affect the rights of the non-signing parent. So the non-signing parent still has and maintains all of their rights over that minor child. And it can be revoked at any time, which allows the non-signing parent to revoke that power of attorney.
So, what I understand is if between parents, they have other legal
parents that they can appeal to. Correct. Our delegation of powers is sort of the base, the easiest, simplest, before things get elevated in terms of a full blown custody battle, which is not what we want. This is supposed to be sort of an easier way out to at least get back on their feet without risk losing custody of the child. So, another question that was raised. Kind of doing permanent renting and properties that are basically on one policy. And the change that we would like to add into this version is to remove the language of property. There are two parts of the bill that refer to property held over a minor child. The first is on page 2, line 3. And the second iteration of the word property is on page 3, line 13. This will prevent the host families of any three years from ever having any purview over property of the minor child, so that would still remain with them, with the biological parent.
Any questions for
that one? If the change were adopted.
So you're
going to welcome the change? We would like to remove the changes.
Yes. Senator,
we have
to
There's also a question as to what the ability to recoup costs for medical and dental or any incidental costs related to care of a child. We have decided to forego addressing that because in conversations with Timmy Curley and how we can help operate that when a family is entering into an agreement using this power of attorney, it's already agreed upon prior to that they will not seek any medical costs. Because the whole point of this is that it's supposed to be no cost. It is supposed to be minimal cost that the host parent or attorney in fact is not seeking any compensation whatsoever. They are just doing this help out in other struggling families to try to get them sooner.
Okay,
well,
thank you.
first met up with someone that had a power of attorney, you know, gives a power of attorney to another person or the child, but the child has some major decision, let's say, and needs significant medical care, and then that surgery can cost $22,000. The person responsible, that the person with power of attorney would not be responsible, it would be the biological family. That's going to
time. That's a huge check.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Senator. All right, continue.
So I believe that is all of the questions. Oh, excuse me. There's one further question from Senator Montesi in regards to age. In this particular bill, it's outside the context of the bill. However, it would be up to individual organizations to put their own standard in terms of the ability to discover over an 18-year-old being placed around season of 14-year-old or, a teenager being placed with an 18-year-old. This seems like a legal adult, but that's not the context of this bill. And we've got some other questions. Yes, sir, Jim.
This is a question on the follow-up question. Do you want to know about what happens if one parent disagrees with the power of attorney being brought into the head of the third party?
So that goes back to sort of the basic delegation of power by a parent. If one parent signs and the other parent does not, and that parent does not lose any rights to that power that minor child, it does maintain the ability to revoke that power of attorney. That's one of the sort of simple things about what a power of attorney is that it can be revoked at any time by your parent. I'm just trying to think of situations where perhaps, sometimes situations, family situations are often times where it can be kind of messy. One parent provides for a power of attorney to an individual that the other parent feels is actually presents harm to the child. And they don't know about it because there's no way, there's no authority or anything, there's no communication, it seems.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Costello, my suggestion is that we talk with Jerry Cuddy, who's an alliance president of the Hill, and he's actually dealt with real life scenarios. And I think she might be able to address your concern with actually how this is dealt with. Remember, these families are volunteer fit. The families that are seeking assistance voluntarily call the DHL because they want to retain that custody of their children. They're working hard to resolve the issues they're facing. And so this is a first step to stay away from Office of Children Services where the custody may be lost. And so there is much more cooperation, perhaps you're envisioning, when Office of Children Services steps in. But this company can probably speak to some real life situations.
And you had a dialogue with the two senators that posed the question.
Yes, this is Jerry Connelly, Deputy Senator. We have had the same situation regarding custody that Buffalo brought up. In this situation where the parents wrote the letter called and wanted to put the kids within two families and then call attorneys. After the children had been placed for probably close to a month, he gave an RFP and he actually didn't want to get removed from freedom at those representations. And because he appeared, we basically had him sign the delayed power of attorney. And if he wouldn't have wanted to be there, then he would have had a right to revoke
So, the legislation for a pass is the law, regardless if there's a big deal or not. So that's why my question is absent. He's wonderful organizations. I understand the intent of the legislation is to basically avoid sort of this process that's so formal and subjective with OCS, where you don't necessarily need that finality, but you might need sort of a place, a time. And so I understand the intent. I'm just thinking, this would be on the statutes, and you don't have any statutes, and I can find a power of attorney that allows somebody to travel with my child outside of the state, and the other parent wouldn't even know that the power of attorney had been signed. And I appreciate the response in terms of not the other parent can always revoke it. That's an after the fact scenario. I'm just still a little curious about how that power would work for those families that don't go through the panel.
Still the subject, I brought up some concerns from it originally, but in reading the existing law, doesn't that delegation of power of attorney exist today by a single parent? Is this correct?
Yes, I'm
not sure if you're done. And that very item is from the law, it's not a if you can do a power attorney, how long do you need to spell?
So for the question, I'm going to talk to you. Part of the reason that we're doing this, this is quite our staff, it's a very useful. So when we first started with this bill, it was just the power attorney statute, which is basically existing law can be done and has been recognized, Jerry has talked about. But one of the reasons that we wanted to make it a little bit more robust, and that's something that was in action, like Spouse and Children's Services, they do like that this is a little more of a robust power of attorney, especially when it deals with a minor child, because these tend to be a little bit more sensitive cases. The other reason that we are doing this bill is because, especially this WordPress version of Age Hotel, is because currently, you can have the families or children, they have been very, very standard OCS. And even though they have no involvement at all with OCS, they are under OCS's purview. And so we are trying to create an avenue for them to continue to exist and to continue to operate and provide these resources to the communities throughout our state without ever running the risk or having another fear that they're going to be taken away. So that's why we're doing this bill. And I'm sure Jerry can help with those comments as well.
Gives a single parent the right to create this power of attorney. It doesn't say anything about requiring both parents to sign. And Jerry testified, I think that's what it says in the last year, and I think the concern is open family, one parent says ownership that month to the other parents, and the other parent says no, or any question. So if there's another person in the court, so I'm just wondering if it doesn't already say that, you know, maybe we should have this requirement that both parents agree to this. Sorry, Diesel.
Thank you. To make sure, Senator Wilkowski, we had assistance from
the attorney for the jury, Mr. Jeff Richardson, who provided us with a summary of Elgin Keller's right parent. And it's a scale. This is very helpful to me. The scale, and the lowest end of the scale, of the air quotes, is delegation of powers by parent. So this requires no court filing. The delegation does not affect the rights of the non signing parent. It can be revoked at any time. The next level up is guardianship, which requires a court action. So you see the step that's taken as a much higher threshold. The court now is involved, where the delegation of powers is not court filing. So this is a pretty nimble process, the delegation of powers, which can be activated and yet revoked instantly. And so there is minimal difficulty for the parent who was uninformed for whatever reason, out of state, disengaged, whatever, to reverse this. I think it's quite safe, as Ms. Harley testified in that situation with the dedication.
And maybe Sharon can finish this one, but not on this one, the language here. He says, for instance, in section 2, this is a parent or guardian of a minor child, child by its care of its family, may delegate to another person. And then if you go to section 3 by 9, a parent or guardian who delegates their power under their possession may revoke. So I'm concerned about the situation where you have the parents who are disputing. I think they should go with my mother up and turn into the other parent. He knows nothing about it, and then finds out about it. And he's relying on the other person to revoke that. He has, that's the scenario that I'm living in. I agree, I think the other client.
Right. So, to make sure Senator Lancaster, if I'm making a report to you, because this party is not to Senator Diesel, can you look at the legal memo, section number 3? February 26, 2015, reversing both parents. Does use the singular issue of parents, however, it does also include the plural.
If you want to separate, say, someone or both parents next to the parent for the child. So, you have the ability for one parent, and if I'm assuming you want to, if you're saying that both parents must sign the power of three, or what would happen if one parent disagrees? That's the scenario on the vision. Where you have parents who disagree, and then they require a court proceeding. One parent can just go out and say, okay, I'm going to use your power of three with my mother in Cleveland. And then the father's in Anchorage saying, I disagree. Well, sorry, I'm not going to live that power of three. You took me to court. That's the scenario on the answer. I'm wondering if we don't just want to specify where these two parents both parents have to agree with this. Charity has a reason why we don't want to do that.
But charity is right. They kind of feed back and forth on the parent-to-parent issue. How is it played out in your experience?
Well, what I was going to say is that it already is, this language already exists in the electoral power of attorney, so without changing one person's right to be able to revoke the power of attorney, so that is changing. As far as what plays out in real life, I think the problem is saying that two courts at this time is most of the values and calls are people that have had life that's struggling and they don't know, maybe don't know where their current is, or maybe they're not involved in that one place in the other court. A couple of weeks ago, where the father of the child was basically running from the law or weren't happy with that, and so he or she to see us at all, but the mother decided to say, well, you told me silent that he didn't want to be on the record anymore. And so I can see that it would pose some problems for us if we already tried to lock down both parents, or even prove that both parents are affected.
So, just to clarify the existing law, if you look at section 13.26.020, that is allowed today, and if you refer to section 01305, it talks about the tense number and gender regarding parents.
And B says words in a singular number include the plural, and words in a plural number include the singular. So this law allows permission for a power of attorney by one or both parents. It has the same meaning in the law.
So you can see the circumstance of the divided family may or will not have to be resolved in court, but at this point, one has the legal power. That's what it looks like to me. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's an implied power on page 221. Because it says, it's talking here about compensation, I understand, but it says, unless the parent or guardian revokes the power of attorney, so it doesn't even, it doesn't identify whether it is a parent that signed it or, it's a parent, and so it seems like it's kind of implied here, but it's not that clear, and I think oftentimes we run laws for the majority of the people that they should apply to, or they actually will apply to everybody, and they might be able to say, more reasonable or something like that, to apply the situation that was just described, and also provide a little bit of protection from the parent who's going to see this and say, well, I can find that power of attorney, and my partner will never find out.
So, to make sure Senator Costello, Governor Trump, and Senator Diesel, when that person is putting in any sort of qualification for contacting potentially a parent who has left the state of the country is out of the picture, it is a little bit of a power of attorney or delegation powers, excuse me, is that's quick. That's what's certain that it happened immediately when there are emergency circumstances that happen. For example, I am aware of that we were June last hearing by Ms. Hardy that there was a parent who was previously had their children taken away by OCS and they were returned and she was relapsing and it was an emergency and she knew she needed to go get treatment, otherwise she was risking losing her children. And so that's the whole reason that the delegation of powers is quick. It's something that can happen, but it's also that it can be revoked immediately. And if we have to plan that part of this, you have to wait X number of days. To hear from the other parent, the other biological parent, etc., that I could defeat the whole purpose of what we're trying to do here.
So, will you guys be helped? Just looking at page 2, lines 9 to 12, there was a grant that says, going on, it says, as a parent or guardian who delegates the power of attorney of the sexual leader of the power of attorney, and if a parent or guardian revokes the power of attorney, the second sentence is the parent or guardian who actually tells you the parent, right? I think that's the so, just a suggestion that, what if we said something like either parent or guardian? So, what I'm trying to get at is the mother is in trouble, we need to get the power of three, can delegate right away, but if we said something like either parent, at that point, can have both their powers, right? So that maybe the father who finds out weekly and signs a call like this. But, I'm curious if Charity has any comments on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually think that the finding that on the perspective of both parents who necessarily don't see them to apply to locate the provision of it, but that both parents who have the right to know about the which is really our intention. We don't need to take some of them with John Boxman and be careful.
Understanding that if a parent would have been equal in the years, the connection is very explicit, and that would be fine. And in our open discussion, I see it as a potential problem. If you have a parent who also has the right to work with their parent, I would see that they had the right under this condition, I understand your argument. It seems to me, with what I just said, if that is the case, that I certainly am, I certainly wouldn't apply
this clarification, if that makes other community members feel better. I think that everybody in existing law that either parent are both parents and both parents are either parents.
I think the person that I'm hearing this point is not getting a sort of paper record as to fine-tune the law, because if they're going to go according to the circumstances, you're going to go to according to a different level. So, Senator Diesel.
You know, I understand what Senator Kelsey is saying in line 1. And what if it's a parent or a guardian that is searching on the local law to tell you anything? And it takes out the phrase, who delegates the power? Because I think that's where there's confusion. It sounds like it's only the parent who delegated the power to revoke it. And really, we mean, as Senator Kelsey said, either a parent needs to be the one. So what if we just took out that phrase, who delegates the power? That's clear that it could be either. Or it's...
So, I think that probably solves the problem. I think that I'm just envisioning fights over by the parent who wasn't notified, and it's also responding to others trying to tell them to talk to them. That seems like it's all that fun. So, it would be striking that who delegates and power, whether it be a parent or a decision, be a result of that. I think it's all one of the focus and delegates the power under any of this section. And then we just read our guardian here with the power of the family. I feel like it's a little fuzzy. It would strike who delegates the power under any of this section. And we're just going to air in the neighborhood of arbitrary income. And you will be there in the reservation. Well, first, we have to adopt the motion. So, from the objection,
so if that would be the version before us, then now we can tool it.
Ms. Mark, you need a point.
So, Chair, I just wanted to point out, we also discussed your potential approval of our property. On page 2, I think page 3, the adult disagreed with an issue with page 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a conceptual amendment now that we have the hotel version before us. So, we have a conceptual amendment number 1, which would do what? That is amending section 2, page 2, line 3. We're going to be removing the word property from the delegation of power for another child. So it should now say one or more powers regarding the care or custody of the minor child, except.
And then the other section is.
Is that all?
There's a, Mr. Chair, oh, I thought you found another word property in the bill. On page 3, line 13.
And for the second half, we have the conceptual amendment. The word property, page 2, line 3.
Page 3, line 13.
Page 3, line 13. So, I'll just take that. Take the word property on page 2, line 3, and page 3, line 13, and page 3, line 13, acceptable then. Any objections to that amendment going into this one? Okay, we can conceptual amendment 1. And then there was another amendment, potential on page 2. I understand that and that was the way I understand it on page 2, line 9, removing the words as your guardian, the abilities of power in the aid of this section. And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry for you. Mr. Chairman, there's a suggestion, a failure amendment to the conceptual. If you don't get any amendments, that's so you can stay in. I'll just say what I've been suggesting this morning.
I just wanted to remove to delegate the power under this section from the first part of the sentence and add under this section after power of attorney. So that we're clarifying the power of attorney that was awarded under that section. So I'm just thinking if you again or attorney, then revoke the power of attorney under any of this section and anybody.
No. I don't know if it makes any difference because you're under the heading of delegation power of attorney and it's a standalone. That's what I gave a senior right, I think, of them to be revoked the power of attorney. Any thoughts on that? Maybe some initial congrats, some saying that, someone was asking, maybe we should get a question on the city.
So it's going to be a specific power of attorney and not just annual power of attorney. That's why we will probably direct you to A of that section. So just carry legal words down below and clarifies that A, parent, or guardian, you invoke that power of attorney. So that sense again, if you like, if you don't need it, but the parent or guardian can invoke the power of attorney under A of this section at any time.
So, post-spirit input, I make the motion to accept it and restate it so we can have it clearly entered down in prayer.
I'm in consensual order that I'm with you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so you can see
it. To clarify, and I hope it concerns several committee members, I want to restate B. Page 2, line 9, now we have parent or guardian to invoke the power of attorney under any of this section at any time. And we remove the word to delegate the power under any of this section. Is there any objection to that?
Thank you for that, Senator Bissell, through the chair. On page 5, line 17 and 18 is the definition of attorney fact related to this particular bill. So I suppose revisers would adjust things. I'm not sure how that works. Or create a committee to adjust things.
But that is not a difference in the law, then you're right. I think the advisors would catch that if it was not a policy change. The policy change part of it does, and so I'd say that was a good catch by the Senate Bissell. That's a lot of debate on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for Senate Bill 180, version H, as submitted from committee with individual recommendations and the attached sort of the objection to moving the bill out there.
Have one more, you have a few minutes left in the committee. So we then stick around to sign on Senate Bill 180, and at this point, we will work to public testimony again back on Senate Bill 174. And then there's I think it was a crowd changer on the acreage. So, thumbs up.
So, I'm ready.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Very well. Can you hear me back on Senate Bill 174, please?
First of all, thanks for taking the time to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it. Thank you for your public service to our country. And any questions at this point? See no questions. Thank you, sir, for having the time to come out and testify for the Senate. Appreciate it. All right, so that there is going to be no public hearing on Friday. We will reconvene on Monday. Thank you.